everybody, and welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Kevin Kunzman, Managing Editor with MD Magazine, and I will be your host for this edition of Doc Talk. Today, we are joined by nurse practitioner Whitney Morgan Block, CEO, President, and Founder of the National Allergy Center, as we discuss the final portion of our three-part chat on food allergy care. Whitney, we've already hit on some topics in food allergy prevention and diagnosis, and now we're looking to tie this whole thing up with a bigger talk on treating food allergies. So if you wanted to start off with anything before we got going, go ahead.
No, I think that this is really an exciting time in the world of food allergies. And for such a long time, the standard of care has food allergies for patients was avoid the foods that you're allergic to. And that's changing now that there are new therapies available, giving patients options.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very optimistic conversation we're about to have. So let's dive into a little bit with our first question. And that's really to expand a bit more on your thoughts on this growing pipeline of food immunotherapy options that we're seeing today.
Yeah, so I think it's really exciting that we have options now versus what we didn't have before. So one new therapy is called oral immunotherapy, sometimes called shortened to OIT for short. During OIT, you start eating a very low dose of the food you're allergic to and gradually build up over time to train your body to tolerate the food without having an allergic reaction. Another type of therapy is called sublingual immunotherapy, also known as SLIT, where you put drops of the food that you're allergic to in liquid form under your tongue to train your body, same kind of way, gradually building up. And another way is called the epicutaneous immunotherapy, which is also known as patch therapy, where you wear a patch with some of the allergen on it on your skin to get to a state of desensitization. As with all therapies, all of them have advantages and disadvantages that have to be weighed for the individual patient. Since I worked at Stanford University for about 6 years and worked on research studies involving all three of these types of therapy, I know quite a lot about them and about their side effects and everything. When I opened the National Allergy Center in 2017, we started offering, outside of research trials, oral immunotherapy with and without a medication called Xolair, which we can get into in a little bit.
Great. Yeah. And looking forward to discussing that a bit more. It's come up certainly a lot in some previous reporting that we've done here at MD Mag, but touching strictly on these food immunotherapies, obviously with all the new data, all the promising data that's been coming out, there's also some additional necessary conversations that need to happen about side effects. So could you expand a bit more on exactly what these side effects are that we're seeing, any adverse events and any causes for concern for treating physicians?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So the most common side effects for all three therapies are pretty similar. The biggest side effect of SLIT is itchiness in the mouth and the throat. The biggest side effect of patch therapy is itchiness at the site of the patch where it's applied. And the biggest side effect of OIT is itchiness at the mouth and in the throat, and as well as abdominal pain. With OIT in particular, those symptoms are very common, with about 80 to 85% of people getting them at some point during their therapy. And although uncomfortable, those symptoms typically aren't very dangerous. In many research studies, OIT is found to have more side effects compared to SLIT and patch therapy, but it's also found to be quite a bit more effective. The majority of reactions seen in OIT are mild, and many don't even require treatment. One of the most common questions I get when from parents is my kid going to need epi during OIT? And we did a research study over at Stanford and analyzed about 42,000 OIT doses and found the rate of epinephrine use ranged throughout the year from 0.5 to 2 administrations in every 1,000 doses taken. So you can tell the rate of epinephrine administration is pretty darn low. Another side effect that's worth mentioning is a disorder called eosinophilic esophagitis, or EOE for short. It's a really rare disorder where eosinophils start accumulating in the esophagus where they're not supposed to be. Over time, you might start seeing symptoms like trouble swallowing, a sticky pancake feeling in the back of the throat, nausea, or vomiting. It can easily be overlooked if you don't know what you're looking for, since it's not IgE mediated. We talked before about what IgE mediated means and how those reactions typically occur quite quickly, within a few minutes to 2 hours after you eat the food, With EoE, it takes time for the eosinophils to migrate to the esophagus, so EoE symptoms you typically won't see immediately after eating an allergen. You might see them hours or even days later.
That's great to know. Thank you for that. And this is a question that's certainly going to come up as we get to a place where these therapies are on the market, more readily available for patients, and being compared more aggressively with one another. But if maybe we can try to answer it now. Is there one therapy that works best for patients, or at least better than the others we have?
Different therapies may work best for different people depending on personal goals and individual circumstances. From an efficacy standpoint, though, it seems that OIT might be the most effective of the three. If we just talk about peanut as an example, you should understand that there's about 240 milligrams to 300 milligrams of protein in one peanut. And we talked about how you're allergic to the protein of part of the peanut. So in one patch study, after a year of wearing an active patch, about 53% of kids aged 4 to 11 could eat at least 300 milligrams of protein, or about one big peanut. We think that the patch might be more effective in younger kids, and that's why they're currently doing a trial with the patch in kids 1 to 3 years old. So we don't have that data out yet, but that's really promising that maybe that number might be a little bit better, and it might be more efficacious in the younger kids. Regarding slits, in one study done with kids aged 7 to 13 years old who did therapy for about a year, 90% of them passed a challenge to a little over 496 milligrams of protein, which is about two peanuts. Compare that to an OIT study where the same aged kids did therapy for about a year. About 64% of them were able to tolerate 7,246 milligrams of protein, which is about 30 peanuts. So it seems from that data, you can tell that OIT can give you protection to a higher amount of peanut quicker than slit or patch therapy. The other thing to consider is that about 40% of kids are allergic to more than one food. There have been multiple allergen OIT studies, but I've never actually seen a multi-allergen slit study, and the company who makes the patch hasn't studied anything except a peanut patch and a milk patch. So I think for those 40%, it seems like OIT might be the best option at this point.
Well, that's great to know, and I'm interested to see how it shakes out as the field continues to advance and we have more considerations to make in terms of therapy options. And speaking of, one therapy class that has been really making headlines, especially in inflammation care and type 2 inflammation and other related fields, biologics. How do we see them figuring into allergy treatment now?
Biologics seem to be a useful tool in food allergy treatment. There's a medication called Xolair, which is FDA approved for severe asthma and idiopathic urticaria, which is a fancy way of saying people that randomly break out in hives. We've been using it in food allergy treatment for over 7 years to accelerate the desensitization process. The way it works is that it blocks IgE receptors, allowing the food to be introduced quicker than if those receptors weren't blocked. This can greatly reduce the amount of time it takes to reach a maintenance dose. For example, for peanut, without Xolair, it might take 6 to 8 months to build up to 2 peanuts, while with Xolair, it may take a day to 2 weeks to get up to those same 2 peanuts. It's exciting. Back in 2018, just last year, the FDA granted breakthrough designation therapy status to Xolair for the prevention of severe allergic reactions. And this therapy, we're currently offering this combination therapy, OIT plus Xolair, as an option for patients at the National Allergy Center. And we use Xolair in kids, in eligible kids over the age of 4 years old. Another biologic that we're looking at in research studies is a medication called Dupixent or Dupilumab. It's FDA approved for asthma and eczema, and it doesn't block IgE receptors, but instead blocks another inflammatory pathway that we think may prevent allergic reactions from occurring. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, to see if one works better than the other, if Xolair is better than Dupilumab, or if vice versa, or maybe there is some combination of the two to make it work even better. Still kind of unknown.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to think that at this date and time in 2019, we have no approved marketed therapy for food allergy. And in just a few years, we may be looking at a loaded competitive market filled with biologic options, direct options, all these capabilities. It's going to be really fascinating. But that's even in just a year or two from now. What do you see in the next 5 years the field of new allergy therapy looks like for us.
In the next 5 years, I think the food allergy field will most certainly keep growing and gaining a ton of knowledge. We still have a lot of questions out there about what therapy is best for which people, what the best maintenance dose is, how long you need to be on that maintenance dose, which biologic should be used, or maybe a combination of biologics. There's also an interesting study that's currently being conducted on a DNA vaccine. The way that works is that the vaccine kind of contains the blueprint for how to make a peanut. And once it's in your body uses that blueprint to create its own peanut protein. And the thought is that if your body is making its own peanut protein, then it knows what it looks like. And then when you eat a peanut, your body won't think it's a danger and won't react. This technology has been shown to be effective in people with Japanese cedar tree allergy, but that's a little different since you don't really eat Japanese cedar trees.
Certainly excited to see what more will come from it. So is there anything else you'd want to add relative to this therapy talk? Any other looking forward statements you have?
I think the biggest takeaway message from all of this is that avoidance isn't the only option anymore. There are therapies available now and there's more on the horizon. So I would encourage everybody to do their research and seek out experienced clinicians that can offer explanation and guidance on what's best for the individual patient.
Yeah, it just seems that just like any other field of medicine, the best hope you have is to eventually have individualized therapy, personalized care options. But a big portion of that is the requirement of education, both physician and the patient themselves. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out, but I definitely have to echo that is do your homework, communicate, figure out what's going to work best for you. Thank you so much, Whitney. Again, this was our final talk of this three-part series on food allergy care. And if you have any closing thoughts you would have for the audience, please go ahead.
Thank you for letting me come on and speak. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is whitney@nationalallergycenter.com. Feel free, regardless of whether you're a patient or whether you're a doctor, if you have any questions about oral immunotherapy or food allergy treatment or diagnosis or prevention, any of that, I'm free to answer any questions.
Thank you so much again, Whitney, and thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back with a new episode next week, but for now, be sure to check out parts 1 and 2 of our food allergy chat with Whitney on cause and prevention and diagnosis. And for the latest in all food allergy news, be sure to visit mdmagazine.com. I'm Kevin Kunzman, and thank you for listening to Doc Talk.